Welcome to today's podcast, sponsored by Hillsdale College, all things Hillsdale at hillsdale.edu. I encourage you to take advantage of the many free online courses there, and of course, to listen to the Hillsdale Dialogues, all of them at hughforhillsdale.com, or just Google Apple, iTunes, and Hillsdale. Hi, Canada, I'm Hugh Hewitt. It's Friday. Enjoy the day. Now, out of the corner of my eye all week, I have been observing an increasing controversy about Harrison Butker. He is the equal of any kicker in the NFL. If you watch the Super Bowl this year, he had a 57-yarder. Justin Tucker and he are probably at the top of the game. And I wish the Browns, you know, maybe Cade York will develop into that. We certainly like Dustin Hopkins. But, you know, he's really up there. He gave a commencement speech at Benedictine College. I know about Benedictine because Matt Tynan is my pal. And Matt is a Denver area car dealer and a wonderful guy. He's on the board at Benedictine. He sends me some Benedictine loot every now and then. It's a good Catholic college in Kansas. So what did Harrison Butker say? I actually haven't heard the speech, but I asked Generalissimo to grab it, and let's listen to it as to why the left is melting down over what a kicker said. Let's roll that, Harley.
Ladies and gentlemen of the class of 2024, I would like to start off by congratulating all of you for successfully making it to this achievement today. I'm sure your high school graduation was not what you had imagined, and most likely neither was your first couple years of college. By making it to this moment through all the adversity thrown your way from COVID, I hope you learned the important lessons that suffering in this life is only temporary. As a group, you witnessed firsthand how bad leaders who don't stay in their lane can have a negative impact on society. It is through this lens that I want to take stock of how we got to where we are and where we want to go as citizens and, yes, as Catholics. One last thing before I begin. I want to be sure to thank President Minnis and the board for their invitation to speak. When President Minnis first reached out a couple of months ago, I had originally said no. You see, last year I gave the commencement address at my alma mater, Georgia Tech, and I felt that one graduation speech was more than enough, especially for someone who isn't a professional speaker. But of course, President Minnis used his gift of persuasion and spoke to the many challenges you all faced throughout the COVID fiasco and how you missed out on so many milestones the rest of us older people have taken for granted. While COVID might have played a large role throughout your formative years, it is not unique. Bad policies and poor leadership have negatively impacted major life issues. Things like abortion, IVF, surrogacy, euthanasia, as well as a growing support for degenerate cultural values and media all stem from the pervasiveness of disorder. Our own nation is led by a man who publicly and proudly proclaims his Catholic faith, but at the same time is delusional enough to make the sign of the cross during a pro-abortion rally.
Stop the tape. Now I understand. Now I understand. I will hear the rest of it. He attacked President Biden for being pro-abortion rights and doing the sign of the cross at an abortion clinic. Yeah, that upset a lot of Catholics. It did. But now you know why the red flare went up. He must be destroyed. Let's hear it.
And his support for the murder of innocent babies that I'm sure to many people, it appears that you...
Stop the tape. You see, you're not allowed... Have you ever heard anyone say that on the media? The murder of innocent babies. Have you ever heard that? And of course you haven't. And that is what pro-life people think. It's about a third of the country. And it certainly is appropriate at a Catholic college by a observant Catholic to say that. But now we know what's really going on here. He must be destroyed. He's pro-life. Keep going.
Catholic and pro-choice. He is not alone. From the man behind the COVID lockdowns to the people pushing dangerous gender ideologies onto the youth of America, they all have a glaring thing in common. They are Catholic. This is an important reminder that being Catholic alone doesn't cut it. These are the sorts of things we are told in polite society to not bring up. You know, the difficult and unpleasant things. But if we are going to be men and women for this time in history, we need to stop pretending that the Church of Nice is a winning proposition. We must always speak and act in charity, but never mistake charity for cowardice. It is safe to say that over the past few years, I've gained quite the reputation for speaking my mind. I never envisioned myself nor wanted to have this sort of a platform, but God has given it to me, so I have no other choice but to embrace it and preach more hard truths about accepting your lane and staying in it. As members of the church founded by Jesus Christ, it is our duty and ultimately privilege to be authentically and unapologetically Catholic. Don't be mistaken, even within the church, people in polite Catholic circles will try to persuade you to remain silent. There even was an award-winning film called Silence, made by a fellow Catholic, wherein one of the main characters, a Jesuit priest, abandoned the church, and as an apostate, when he died, is seen grasping a crucifix, quiet and unknown to anyone but God. As a friend of Benedictine College, His Excellency Bishop Robert Barron said in his review of the film, "It was exactly what the cultural elite want to see in Christianity, private, hidden away, and harmless." Our Catholic faith has always been countercultural. Our Lord, along with countless followers, were all put to death for their adherence to her teachings. The world around us says that we should keep our beliefs to ourselves whenever they go against the tyranny of diversity, equity, and inclusion. We fear speaking truth because now, unfortunately, truth is in the minority. Congress just passed a bill restating something as basic as the biblical teaching of who killed Jesus could land you in jail. But make no mistake, before we even attempt to fix any of the issues plaguing society, we must first get our own house in order, and it starts with our leaders. The bishops and priests appointed by God as our spiritual fathers must be rightly ordered. There is not enough time today for me to list all the stories of priests and bishops misleading their flocks, but none of us can blame ignorance anymore and just blindly proclaim that that's what Father said. Because sadly, many priests we are looking to for leadership are the same ones who prioritize their hobbies or even photos with their dogs and matching outfits for the parish directory. It's easy for us laymen and women to think that in order for us to be holy, that we must be active in our parish and try to fix it. Yes, we absolutely should be involved in supporting our parishes, but we cannot be the source for our parish priests to lean on to help with their problems. Just as we look at the relationship between a father and his son, so too should we look at the relationship between a priest and his people. It would not be appropriate for me to always be looking to my son for help when it is my job as his father to lead him. St. Jose Maria Escriva states that priests are ordained to serve and should not yield to temptation to imitate lay people, but to be priests through and through. Tragically, so many priests revolve much of their happiness from the adulation they receive from their parishioners, and in searching for this, they let their guard down and become overly familiar. This undue familiarity will prove to be problematic every time, because as my teammate's girlfriend says, familiarity breeds contempt. St. Jose Maria continues that some want to see the priest as just another man. That is not so. They want to find in the priest those virtues proper to every Christian and indeed every honorable man. Understanding, justice, a life of work, priestly work in this instance, and good manners. It is not prudent as the laity for us to consume ourselves in becoming amateur theologians so that we can decipher this or that theological teaching, unless, of course, you are a theology major. We must be intentional.
Stop for a second. Stop the tape. He's triggered every leftist in the country by this point. By the way, St. Jose Maria is the founder of Opus Dei. So they should have been just put a big trigger warning on this, that you're going to be triggered. But he brought up gender dysphoria. He brought up priests not doing their job. He brought up Catholics not being Catholic. And no wonder the world is falling in on his head. But you go. You're not going to turn me into a Chiefs fan. But I am certainly now a fan of Harrison Butker, unless he beats the Browns. And I am reminded, I'm going to tell you, Matthew chapter 5, verses 10 to 12. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you, they will... they will falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. All right, so Harrison Butker is speaking just pure Catholic doctrine here at a Catholic college, and he's a practicing Catholic, and he's talking to the Catholic kids who are embarking upon a life that will be difficult in this culture. And if you heard even 8 minutes of this speech thus far anywhere else, I'll be amazed. But I'm going to play more of it because Harrison Butker is getting smashed up by leftist media like The View, and it's absurd. I'm not going to listen to them tell me what a Catholic man said at a Catholic college. I'm going to listen to the guy I talk, and then we'll consider it together. So don't go anywhere, because I think this is a very interesting cultural moment that it's okay to be anti-Catholic in the United States. It's okay. Mark Thiessen and I often see each other at Mass because we go to the same church when I'm in Virginia. He took out after someone on The View yesterday. I don't even watch The View. I don't care what they say on The View. But if it's going to be anti-Catholic weekend, let's at least hear what Harrison Butker had to say. Stay tuned. I'll be right back on The Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. You may see out of the corner of your eye references to Harrison Butker, and it's odd because it's the offseason and the Super Bowl winning kicker and just extraordinary athlete. Harrison Butker is an Orthodox Catholic, and he gave a speech at Benedictine College, and the left blew out its lights and began denouncing him. So I thought, let's play it. I haven't heard it yet, so let's go back to the tape. Harrison Butker last Saturday.
Our focus on our state in life and our own vocation. And for most of us, that's as married men and women. Still, we have so many great resources at our fingertips that it doesn't take long to find traditional and timeless teachings that haven't been ambiguously reworded for our times. Plus, there are still many good and holy priests, and it's up to us to seek them out. The chaos of the world is unfortunately reflected in the chaos in our parishes, and sadly, in our cathedrals too. As we saw during the pandemic, too many bishops were not leaders at all. They were motivated by fear of being sued, fear of being removed, fear of being disliked. They showed by their actions, intentional or unintentional, that the sacraments don't actually matter. Because of this, countless people died alone without access to the sacraments, and it's a tragedy we must never forget. As Catholics, we can look to so many examples of heroic shepherds who gave their lives for their people and ultimately the church. We cannot buy into the lie that the things we experienced during COVID were appropriate. Over the centuries, there have been great wars, great famines, and yes, even great diseases, all that came with a level of lethality and danger. But in each of those examples, church leaders leaned into their vocations and ensured that their people received the sacraments. Great saints like St. Damian of Malachi, who knew the dangers of his ministry, stayed for 11 years as a spiritual leader to the leper colonies of Hawaii. His heroism is looked at today as something set apart and unique, when ideally, it should not be unique at all.
Oh my goodness, he's attacking the COVID lockdown policies. No wonder the left is melting down. No, Harrison Butker is like heroin for me. Dwayne whispered in my ear, it's like if David Allen White could kick. And so we're going to play the rest of it after the break. Don't go anywhere. It's not a long speech. I've given a few commencement speeches, and I follow FDR's rules, which he gave to his son, Elliot, when he asked him how to give a speech. Be sincere, be brief, be seated. And so I think this is under 20 minutes, which is about the maximum level. I've heard a two-hour my commencement speech with Alexander Solzhenitsyn in 1978. And I've heard Julie Andrews give one at the University of Colorado. I've heard good ones and bad ones. I'm loving this, but then again, I'm an Orthodox Catholic. But I'm still shocked that people in the media are shocked about this. They should not be shocked about this. This is a Catholic talking to Catholics about what the Catholic Church teaches and still holds to be true, no matter what you heard from a guy at the bar or from the President of the United States or from the former speaker or from Dr. Fauci. They're not telling you what the church really teaches or believes or why. And so Harrison Butker, my hat is off to you, friend. I want to stick with Dustin Hopkins and Cade York, but I'm going to be rooting for you every time you're not playing the Browns. They're playing Kansas City, I think, comes to Cleveland. I may have to go up for that game in December, I think, so I'm not sure about that. By the way, if you want to go to the Blue Angels premiere of their documentary, I'm hosting one Wednesday of next week. Send me an email, hugh@hughhewitt.com. And I'm going to give I've only got 100 tickets, so I'm going to give first preference to aviators and their families and retired aviators and their families. From Boston up to Down East, you can get there if you want to. Let me know, hugh@hughhewitt.com. I'm coming right back in the ReliefFactor.com studio. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. If you're just tuning in, I'm playing the allegedly controversial commencement speech by Harrison Butker at Benedictine College because I hadn't heard it. And I asked Dwayne to grab it, and he did. I'm here to tell you, if you're a new listener to the show, like my new affiliates in Illinois, I'm a Roman Catholic, cradle Catholic. I'm also an evangelical Presbyterian. Long story, you don't need to know it, but I attend Mass every week, and when I miss it, I go to confession before I receive the sacraments. I'm not a big Latin guy. I learned the Mass in Latin to serve the Mass, and then they pulled the rug out from under me with Vatican II, so I'm still bitter about that. But I do know the theology of the Church, and I do believe it, and I've got great mentors and people like Archbishop Chaput and others who tell me when I got something right, when I got something wrong. Harrison Butker is made. Now, remember, there are 52 million Catholics in the United States. Up until COVID, about one in four attended Mass every week. That's what I put myself in that category. So more than 12 million people. No matter how you slice it, there are at least 10 to 20 million people who agree with everything Harrison Butker has said thus far, and probably many more. But they're not in media. In fact, my greatest observation about mainstream media and legacy media is that it lacks observant religious people in the numbers that would represent the United States. That's not to condemn those who are there, but they're mostly secular and they don't really believe in God. And they certainly aren't, I don't think, practicing Catholics of whom I am aware, with whom I have worked, with the exception of a couple at the Post who I know pretty well and are Mass attenders. And many of those also attempt to escape the Church's teaching on life and the Church's teaching on ideology of the body, or the theology of the body, not ideology, the theology of the body. There's a lot that real Catholics don't believe that they ought to believe. And by real Catholics, I mean those who go to Mass every week, and they might just be fuzzy on orthodoxy, but they're there. Harrison Butker is talking to them. And when he's talking about bishops and priests who let it down, Mass attendance dropped from 25% of Catholics to under 17% during COVID. And they haven't come back. So that's lasting damage in a Catholic's eyes to the body of Christ. Nevertheless, let's get back to what Harrison Butker said so you can hear it for yourself. Go ahead. Here.
So a shepherd should love his spiritual children too. That goes even more so for our bishops, these men who are present day apostles. Our bishops once had adoring crowds of people kissing their rings and taking in their every word, but now relegate themselves to a position of inconsequential existence. Now, when a bishop of a diocese or the bishop's conference as a whole puts out an important document on this matter or that, nobody even takes a moment to read it, let alone follow it. No. Today, our shepherds are far more concerned with keeping the doors open to the chancery than they are with saying the difficult stuff out loud. It seems that the only time you hear from your bishops is when it's time for the annual appeal, whereas we need our bishops to be vocal about the teachings of the Church, setting aside their own personal comfort and embracing their cross.
Let me pause here for a moment. Maybe he ought to mention that there are some great bishops like Bishop Burbage, Archbishop Gomez, Archbishop Chaput. Maybe he should have done that, but let's keep going.
But shepherds. So instead of fitting in the world by going along to get along, they too need to stay in their lane and lead. I say all of this not from a place of anger, as we get the leaders we deserve. But this does make me reflect on staying in my lane and focusing on my own vocation and how I can be a better father and husband and live in the world, but not be of it. Focusing on my vocation while praying and fasting for these men will do more for the Church than me complaining about her leaders.
He said, stop the tape. Did he say fast? Now listen, you got to fast in Lent on Ash Wednesday and Good Friday. But I'm not big on the fasting stuff. But, I'm making a little bit light here. This is pure Catholic mainline stuff. There is nothing radical here at all. And Harrison Butker's taken a lot of incoming for saying ordinary things. And I know who's most upset is left-wing bishops. They're the most upset. They're probably calling the viewers, condemn this guy, please, before he gets a hearing. Let's go. More.
So much confusion coming from our leaders. There needs to be concrete examples for people to look to in places like Benedictine, a little Kansas college built high on a bluff above the Missouri River, are showing the world how an ordered, Christ-centered existence is the recipe for success. You need to look no further than the examples all around this campus, where over the past 20 years, enrollment has doubled, construction and revitalization are a constant part of life, and people, the students, the faculty and staff, are thriving. This didn't happen by chance. In a deliberate movement to embrace traditional Catholic values, Benedictine has gone from just another liberal arts school with nothing to set it apart to a thriving beacon of light and a reminder to us all that when you embrace tradition, success, worldly and spiritual, will follow. I am certain the reporters at the AP could not have imagined that their attempt to rebuke and embarrass places and people like those here at Benedictine wouldn't be met with anger, but instead met with excitement and pride. Not the deadly sin sort of pride that has an entire month dedicated to it, but the true God-centered pride that is cooperating with the Holy Ghost to glorify Him. Reading that article now shared all over the world, we see that in the complete surrender of self and a turning towards Christ, you will find happiness. Right here in a little town in Kansas, we find many inspiring lay people using their talents. President Minnis, Dr. Swofford, and Dr. Zimmerer are a few great examples right here on this very campus that will keep the light of Christ burning bright for generations to come. Being locked in with your vocation and staying in your lane is going to be the surest way for you to find true happiness and peace in this life. It is essential that we focus on our own state in life, whether that be as a layperson, a priest, or religious. Ladies and gentlemen of the class of 2024, you are sitting at the edge of the rest of your lives. Each of you has the potential to leave a legacy that transcends yourselves and this era of human existence. In the small ways, by living out your vocation, you will ensure that God's church continues and the world is enlightened by your example. For the ladies present today, congratulations on an amazing accomplishment. You should be proud of all that you have achieved to this point in your young lives. I want to speak directly to you briefly because I think it is you, the women, who have had the most diabolical lies told to you. How many of you are sitting here now about to cross this stage and are thinking about all the promotions and titles you are going to get in your career? Some of you may go on to lead successful careers in the world, but I would venture to guess that the majority of you are most excited about your marriage and the children you will bring into this world. I can tell you that my beautiful wife, Isabel, would be the first to say that her life truly started when she began living her vocation as a wife and as a mother. I'm on this stage today and able to be the man I am because I have a wife who leans into her vocation. I'm beyond blessed with the many talents God has given me, but it cannot be overstated that all of my success is made possible because a girl I met in band class back in middle school would convert to the faith, become my wife, and embrace one of the most important titles of all, homemaker.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my, and they're cheering. Oh, no wonder the view is melting down. Keep going.
She's a primary educator to our children. She's the one who ensures I never let football or my business become a distraction from that of a husband and father. She is the person that knows me best at my core, and it is through our marriage that, Lord willing, we will both attain salvation. I say all of this to you because I have seen it firsthand, how much happier someone can be when they disregard the outside noise and move closer and closer to God's will in their life. Isabel's dream of having a career might not have come true, but if you ask her today if she has any regrets on her decision, she would laugh out loud without hesitation and say, "Heck no." As a man who gets a lot of praise and has been given a platform to speak to audiences like this one today, I pray that I always use my voice for God and not for myself. Everything I am saying to you is not from a place of wisdom, but rather a place of experience. I am hopeful that these words will be seen as those from a man not much older than you, who feels it is imperative that this class, this generation, and this time in our society must stop pretending that the things we see around us are normal. Heterodox ideas abound even within Catholic circles. For let's be honest, there is nothing good about playing God with having children, whether that be your ideal number or the perfect time to conceive. No matter how you spin it, there is nothing natural about Catholic birth control. It is only in the past few years that I have grown encouraged to speak more boldly and directly because, as I mentioned earlier, I have leaned into my vocation as a husband and father and as a man. To the gentleman here today, part of what plagues our society is this lie that has been told to you that men are not necessary in the home or in our communities. As men, we set the tone of the culture, and when that is absent, disorder, dysfunction, and chaos set in. This absence of men in the home is what plays a large role in the violence we see all around the nation. Other countries do not have nearly the same absentee father rates as we find here in the U.S., and a correlation could be made in their drastically lower violence rates as well. Be unapologetic in your masculinity, fighting against the cultural emasculation of men. Do hard things. Never settle for what is easy. You might have a talent that you don't necessarily enjoy, but if it glorifies God, maybe you should lean into that over something that you might think suits you better. I speak from experience as an introvert who now finds myself as an amateur public speaker and an entrepreneur, something I never thought I'd be when I received my industrial engineering degree. The road ahead is bright. Things are changing, society is shifting, and people young and old are embracing tradition. Not only has it been my vocation that has helped me and those closest to me, but not surprising to many of you, should be my outspoken embrace of the traditional Latin Mass. I've been very vocal in my love and devotion to the TLM and its necessity for our lives. But what I think gets misunderstood is that people who attend the TLM do so out of pride or preference. I can speak to my own experience, but for most people I have come across within these communities, this simply is not true.
All right, stop right there. We'll finish it in the next segment. Oh, he's speaking in favor of the traditional Latin Mass. I'm getting it now. He is really a radical. He's about as radical as everyone I grew up with in the 1950s and 60s in Warren, Ohio. He's actually a normie. He's a normie Catholic who likes the Latin Rite, which I lived with for 7 years, and then they took it away. And I wish he might have said, some people are called to be single. Some people are called to be just wives. Some people are called to be just mothers because the father's gone away. Some people are called to all of them. Some people are called to be dads, and some are just called to be husbands. He could have been a little more expansive in addressing the various vocations. But thus far, it's pure gold, and I don't disagree with any of it. Stay tuned. We'll see if I do by the end. Welcome back, America. I hope you have a great weekend planned. I am playing for you the Harrison Butker commencement speech from Benedictine College last Saturday, which has just caused upset across legacy media. And I'm just seeing it out of the corner of my eye, so I asked Dwayne to pull the speech. Let's hear the conclusion of it, and I'll give you my thoughts on it. The conclusion of Harrison Butker's commencement speech at Benedictine College last Saturday.
Not attend the TLM because I think I am better than others, or for the smells and bells, or even for the love of Latin. I attend the TLM because I believe, just as the God of the Old Testament was pretty particular in how he wanted to be worshipped, the same holds true for us today. It is through the TLM that I encountered order and began to pursue it in my own life. Aside from the TLM itself, too many of our sacred traditions have been relegated to things of the past, when in my parish, things such as Ember Days, days when we fast and pray for vocations and for our priests, are still adhered to. The TLM is so essential that I would challenge each of you to pick a place to move where it is readily available. A lot of people have complaints about the parish or the community, but we should not sacrifice the Mass for community. I prioritize the TLM even if the parish isn't beautiful, the priest isn't great, or the community isn't amazing. I still go to the TLM because I believe the holy sacrifice of the Mass is more important than anything else. I say this knowing full well that when each of you rekindle your knowledge and adherence to many of the Church's greatest traditions, you will see how much more colorful and alive your life can and should be. As you move on from this place and enter into the world, know that you will face many challenges. Sadly, I am sure many of you know of the countless stories of good and active members of this community who, after graduation and moving away from the Benedictine bubble, have ended up moving in with their boyfriend or girlfriend prior to marriage. Some even leave the church and abandon God. It is always heartbreaking to hear these stories, and there is a desire to know what happened and what went wrong. What you must remember is that life is about doing the small things well, setting yourself up for success, and surrounding yourself with people who continually push you to be the best version of you. I say this all the time, that iron sharpens iron. It's a great reminder that those closest to us should be making us better. If you are dating someone who doesn't even share your faith, how do you expect that person to help you become a saint? If your friend group is filled with people who only think about what you're doing next weekend and are not willing to have those difficult conversations, how can they help sharpen you? As you prepare to enter into the workforce, it is extremely important that you actually think about the places you are moving to. Who is the bishop? What kind of parishes are there? Do they offer the TLM and have priests who embrace their priestly vocation? Cost of living must not be the only arbiter of your choices, for a life without God is not a life at all, and the cost of salvation is worth more than any career. I'm excited for the future, and I pray that something I have said will resonate as you move on to the next chapter of your life. Never be afraid to profess the one holy Catholic and apostolic church, for this is the church that Jesus Christ established, through which we receive sanctifying grace. I know that my message today had a little less fluff than is expected for these speeches, but I believe that this audience and this venue is the best place to speak openly and honestly about who we are and where we all want to go, which is heaven. I thank God for Benedictine College and for the example it provides to the world. I thank God for men like President Minnis who are doing their part for the kingdom. Come to find out, you can have an authentically Catholic college and a thriving football program. Make no mistake, you are entering into mission territory in a post-God world, but you were made for this, and with God by your side and a constant striving for virtue within your vocation, you too can be a saint. Christ is King to the heights.
That's it. Then he gets a standing ovation. Now, I got to tell you, first of all, if you got to ask yourself, what if he's right? What if Harrison Butker is right? Maybe you don't believe anything. You might be, you know, I've had Richard Dawkins on this show. Hitch used to come on when he was alive almost every week. I know what atheists say, and I know it's silly. And you might be an agnostic. You might not figure it out. Or you might be an argument from design person, and you might be an argument from revelation person. But either way, you might know there's a God, and if there's a God, he's probably going to have revealed himself somewhere, and it's most likely in sacred scripture, and you ought to investigate it and figure it out. But if you're an Orthodox Catholic, there is nothing that Harrison Butker said that you can disagree with. Now, that doesn't mean you should go out and judge everyone around you. It just means that's actually traditional Catholic theology. And he didn't say you have to attend the Latin Mass. He said that he attends the Latin Mass because it helps him. If you're a Protestant, we're not arguing Calvin versus Gregory here. We're not arguing Luther versus John Paul II or Benedictine versus Pope Benedict versus anybody. He'll be Benedict the Great soon. We're arguing simply, is there a God? And if so, what did he say? And how do we live it out? And how do we do it the right way? Harrison Butker gave you the Catholic case. And if you're mad at him, he's not the problem. You are intolerant. If you're mad at him, you might be afraid that what he is saying is true. And if you want him canceled, then you're back in the last exception. Well, I got to say this with an addendum. Until the anti-Semitism broke out in the United States, I thought that the last acceptable bigotry in the United States would be anti-Catholic. Now you can be anti-Jew again on a college campus. But what you can't be is a person of faith, serious person of faith. Harrison Butker, you go, and may you hit every three-point, every field goal, and every point after, unless you're playing the Browns, especially if you're at, on the lakefront. Stay tuned, America. Hour number two, Ben Domenech ahead on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Hope you have a great Friday ahead. I do, and a great weekend as well. Ben Domenech, editor-at-large for The Spectator, Fox News contributor as well, joins me. He got a great podcast, and so I urge you to listen to that, too, on the Fox Podcast Network. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Hugh. It's great to be with you. Plenty to talk about this week.
Well, I started by playing the entire Harrison Butker speech, and yeah. I have some issues with it, but generally speaking, it's just TLM people talking, and I do not understand what the left is melting down about, except
Can I make a point about this? This speech is actually a critique of the church. more than it is anything else. Like, I mean, he said some other things too, some of which I would take issue with. I disagree with his analysis, for instance, of the anti-Semitism bill that he makes reference to. Ilya Shapiro has a great argument, I think, on the other side of that. And of course, I disagree with a couple of the other points that he makes. You can't agree with all of it, but it's actually a critique of the priesthood for most of it. And in a way that I think is deeply intelligent and, you know, you have to respect in terms of the way he's approaching it. I think this is just another example, Hugh, of people in the media at large and in the corporate space too, being just completely scared of anything that's religious and anything having to do with religion and deep faith. They want to pretend like this is something that nobody believes in, that and it's some kind of fringe thing, when in reality it's one of the most animating elements of society and of our culture. And that's something that I think is, you know, represented here by a football player who's clearly a pretty smart guy and has some things to say. He's got strong opinions, but I think it's something that we should be, you know, wrestling with and talking about, as opposed to saying, oh, everybody has to make an apology now. I mean,
you know, he has been criticized by some very, very orthodox Catholics as being a little too arrogant and a little too dangerous for young people to hear in terms of vanity of the TLM movement and things like that. On the other hand, I know what set off the left is he pro-life, and they cannot stand that. He brought up Biden crossing himself in an abortion clinic. It was, you know, downhill for there for the left.
you know that is just, look, that is their religion. It is the one thing that they, it is the one thing that they will, you know, die to protect. It's the one thing that animates them and that they believe. And it's absolutely absurd. I mean, this, to be honest, I don't know if you ever saw the show, it reminded me a bit of Jude Law's speech in the first season of The Young Pope, which is, you know, again, kind of a confrontational speech to the College Cardinals. But it's something here that I think, you know, is an instructive element about the NFL. You can say all sorts of crazy stuff if you're in the NFL, but you can't say that you're pro-life, that you have traditional values, that you believe in, you know, a traditional home. And that's something that, you know, offends them on a level that is just amazing. I mean,
Ben, I can tell you a story. I can't. There's a level of confidentiality you have to keep when you do a debate. But when we were talking about abortion questions, I marveled that of the 40 to 50 people in the room, I don't think anyone else agreed with me. And I'm not a radical. I just think, what's the over-under on the number of abortion questions and follow-up in the first debate, Ben?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, this is the thing that just, you know, it drives me absolutely crazy. But, Hugh, you know, I mean, I think I may have made reference to you before in the green room that, you know, when my wife was on ABC, she was literally the only person on a non-Fox major network who was pro-life.
Yeah, well, that is absolutely
astounding.
Astounding because, you know, there are 52 million Catholics in America, and about one out of four attend Mass every week. Sometimes it's one out of five. And some of them are St. Pius of the 10th. I mean, very far, very, very almost out of the church because they're actually in schism. And I don't know where he is. He might be a Society of Pius the 10th guy. I don't know. I don't care. I'm just saying the reaction is because of the abortion stuff. And they've launched on the homemaker. He didn't say you have to be a homemaker. He said you might be called to be and then be happy with it.
But
it's really amazing to me.
You might be called to be a stay-at-home father. I mean, you know, come on. Everybody has their own calling and vocation. No, it's absolutely absurd to me that this is something that, you know, has you know, lit a fire under people. But, you know, it is funny. I will just say it's probably the only speech in history that references both Taylor Swift and St. Damien.
Well, I played the whole thing so that people at least have heard it before they have an opinion on it. Ben, because I'll bet you not many people listen to it have opinions. I didn't listen to it until this morning. I want to go to Michael Cohen. Now, I want to say beforehand, this trial is a charade. It's a show trial. The indictment does not specify the crime with which the former president is charged on the second crime. It's an abomination of due process, and this judge should have tattooed on his forehead reversible error. Having said all that, isn't it amazing that some people are surprised that Michael Cohen isn't trustworthy?
So, look, I think that this case is just a complete joke, and I think that, you know, it's so funny to see this lawfare attack. Just you know, it's as if Trump is surrounded by an iron dome. You know, like you had all these lawfare missiles fired at him. And it's just, you know, they're just pinging off the place and he's able to survive. And this is the only one that got through. And it's the most embarrassing one because it relies on, you know, someone who is a perjurer and a liar and, you know, has clearly, you know, sort of violated every kind of mode of conduct. It's just and it's
but Ben, I think he's going to get convicted. I do,
yeah,
because it's
yeah.
a New York jury. It's going to take a minor miracle to not yeah. have him convicted. It'll get overturned. It's such an absurd case. Let me ask you about Joe Biden's debate challenge. I said to Martha McCollum yesterday, Joe Biden had to make the debate because he needs it. Trump accepted it because he wants it. What's your assessment?
I agree with your assessment, and it's similar, I would actually say, to the State of the Union. You know, there were some people who were very nervous about that, you know, but he had to go out there and give that speech, you know, whatever you thought of it, simply to prove that he could. Same with the debate. The problem is that the way I kind of see this is the likelihood of him having a good debate after he's basically avoided being confronted on virtually everything other than an occasional shouted Peter Ducey question or something along those lines over the past several years, not months, years, you know, how few interviews that he sat down for, how few any kind of, you know, contentious or tough questions that he's had to answer. I just think that Joe Biden is really risking a lot by doing this way. The one good thing I would say that comes out of this is, as you know, I've been arguing against it for 12 years now, I guess, against the Commission on Presidential Debate.
Yes, you are one of the originals along with me. And it's dead,
yes.
Thank God.
It's a completely out-of-touch organization. They don't have a single millennial on the board. And keep in mind, millennials are now, you know, in their 40s. They're not young people. They never consider anything in terms of any kind of innovation. We have, you know, NFL games on Christmas on Netflix now, you know, and yet they won't consider having something that's, you know, streamed on YouTube or that's available in a more to a wider audience and that, you know, has the kind of stature of something that is truly in the modern era. They still are stuck in this old format, and I hate it. And I hate the fact
it's
that they
dead. Are stricter. But let me ask you, if you think I believe that I asked Donald Trump 30 questions or statement evoking responses in a 35-minute interview. It's fast paced for a reason. The former president is fast paced. Do you think he will have the presence of mind to let Joe Biden talk this time? Now, the first debate last time, I think he might have been sick already because he interrupted too much.
He was.
Do you think he will this time go revert to the superb actor showman that I saw on the debate stage 4 times up close and 12 times in 2016?
Well, I certainly hope that he does. I think it would be he would be very well served by letting you know, Joe Biden tie his own knots. But, you know, you said something there that I think is actually really important, the number of questions that you ask him. In the two opportunities that I've had to interview him, the number one thing that I discovered was when he starts to get off on a tangent, you interrupt.
Yes.
It may seem rude, but the truth is that if you let him get off on a tangent, then he'll go into the cul-de-sacs that are very familiar.
He wanted to talk about the Delta smelt. I have forgotten more about the Delta smelt than presidents know, but I didn't want to talk about it because it's boring.
Yeah, exactly. So you actually have to kind of break up the way that he's thinking about something to get him on a different thing, because that's when you get something that's new and that's when you get something that's interesting. What I think is really important for him going into this debate is I think that in this debate, he should absolutely let Joe Biden talk as much as Joe Biden wants to talk.
Amen.
Every time Joe Biden talks, he ends up in a long, you know, shaggy dog story that makes him, you know, wind himself into knots. And I think that that's the best way to approach debating it.
Yeah, and listen closely to the question. Mock them if you need to. And abortion over under, Ben? I think it's 4. What do you think?
I would take the over on that. Actually.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you could be right. Dana and Jake, I hope you're listening. Ben Domenech, thank you.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Welcome back, America. Sometimes it's better to be lucky than experienced. And I'm very lucky because Terry Pluto joins us now, the dean of sports writers in Ohio and one of the best in the country. He is the author of many books. He is the host, along with Dave Campbell, of Terry's Talkin', the only podcast I never miss. And this week, I listened to it, comes down on Tuesday. And I asked Danielle to book Terry, and Terry said yes for Wednesday. And then President Trump arrived, and so we moved Terry back to today. So, Terry, I hate it, but you got bumped by Trump on Wednesday. Thank you for your patience.
Well, it's fine with me. I am all set. So, I'm just
Terry, I loved this edition of Terry's Talkin' for a very particular reason, actually two. I've been doing this since 1990. I'm pretty good at radio. How long have you been a sports writer? Did you start in 1979?
No, before that, full-time to 77, I probably first got paid for stories in 1974, so.
All right, a long time.
Part times. Yeah, so, you know, I was there when Babe Ruth broke in.
Well, what I loved about my being lucky, you're the only guy who cares about kickers as much as I do. I just played the entire speech by Harrison Butker. Have you listened to it yet?
No, I just saw some, excerpts from it.
Well, what the audience needs to know is Terry writes a column about faith. In addition, I don't know when Terry sleeps. In addition to doing service in his homeless shelter and service with his wife and service in jail and prison ministry and doing about 10 columns a week and living the misery of the Cavs and the Guardians and the Browns. Terry, what I wanted to talk to you about, though, not when you got to the end of Terry's Talkin' this week, you started to talk about athletes who ought to take the money. And I began to think, no one ever talks about risk when they hold out for a year. Would you explain what you were talking about? Elbows and calves and Donovan Mitchell and just take the money, people.
Yeah, I mean, it assumes your place, where you are in your career, that it's, you know, it's an acceptable thing. But the assumption sometimes agents make, employers make, is that they won't get hurt despite overwhelming data in the other areas that you probably, if you're, a, I mean, it's gotten to the point now, if you're a major league pitcher, by the end of your career, more than 50% of them are likely to either have elbow surgery or shoulder surgery. And those are big deals with basketball players, the knee thing, although now right now, if you notice all of a sudden, like Donovan Mitchell had in the playoffs and Giannis from Milwaukee had in the playoffs and Porzingis for the Celtics, calf muscle injuries, which are very, very kind of chronic. They come back and forth. And, you know, it's granted you want to be a free agent, maximize your income power to get a bidding war going. But sometimes a free agent coming off of arm surgery isn't exactly a hot property.
And my favorite example of this, prudence. This is, we're talking about prudential decision making by everyone everywhere, not just superpower millionaire athletes, but just being prudent. Jose Ramirez said, "How much money do I need?" And he signed a 7-year deal and stayed in Cleveland. I thought, there's a smart man, because, you know, everything doubles in 7 years if you're a prudential investor. And he's set for life and his family's set for life. When Donovan Mitchell or Shane Bieber, unfortunately, got the wrong end of this deal.
Yeah.
I just don't understand why they don't take the money. And do you think it's agents or the need to be the best and recognized as the best in the business?
Well, a lot of athletes keep score not only in a scoreboard or with their batting averages, but also with their paychecks. And they have people around them who are always telling them and their family, well, boy, they're paying you X, but look, that guy, he's not even good as you, is making Y. Rarely do you have anybody in an athlete's life come up to him and say, you know, I mean, you've had a really good year, but you're making twice as much of that guy who's a lot better than you are. So, you really should be happy about that. It's like you're held out to this ideal abstract standard. In Jose's case, he had 2 years left on his contract, and the Guardians came to him and said, we'd like to keep you long term. We'll rip up the 2 years, and then we'll give you five more and go from there. And I really believe Jose doesn't like to do media stuff. You know, he really doesn't like to be bothered. He likes to play ball. He likes to have his stuff in the Dominican with his charity foundation, his kids, his family. And he likes to just do it his way in a smaller market. And I think you watch Frankie Lindor go to the Mets, and, yeah, has a ton of money. Here's an example of keeping score, Hugh. Frank Lindor's contract with the Mets was $341 million. Isn't that a strange number?
Wow.
The reason it's 341 is because right before that, Tatis had signed an extension with San Diego for, guess what, $340
million. Oh,
so you could say, I got a million more. You'll often see the weird numbers like this in these things so they could say they got more. And, if you look, Lindor's been up and down, or he's getting paid in New York, but and he wanted the bigger market. He liked more attention. But a lot of other junk comes along with that. And Jose is a total, like, old-fashioned ball player. I don't want to hear all this stuff. They leave me alone here. He's revered here. I'm good with it. I can find a way to make it at $141
million. Now, Terry, the other thing that I don't think a lot of ball players factor in, and maybe agents don't, is it's great to be loved by a community. I mean, if you are an emblem of the community, I mean, you can come and go like LeBron did, and you're not going to be the guy who never picks up a check in Cleveland. You're the guy who left twice. But you can be Jose Ramirez and be loved by be Bernie Kosar and arrange your college life so you get drafted by the Browns. It matters a lot to be loved by a community because sports are short. They're not like sports writers and talk show hosts. They've got 10 years, right?
Mm-hmm. And what Jose did, one thing he insisted in his deal was that he had a no-trade clause. So they can't decide 3 years into it, I'll say, Jose's getting older and we're going to send you to New York or something, you know. So he was able to give up a fair amount of, say, dollars in exchange for control of where he goes. So that's the thing I would do, too. Okay, I'll take less, but I'm doing it to stay here. And I want to make sure you can't just have a new general manager that walks through the door tomorrow and decides to trade me. That was a key part of that move. And then, for example, the NBA is a player named James Harden. I can't even keep track of what team he's on.
Oh, I don't know where he is.
I mean, he's a guy who's made like about four different All-Star teams, Hugh, but he bounces from team to team. I mean, even look at like Kevin Durant, you know, very well-known player. You know where he's playing right now?
No, I don't.
I had to think twice. Phoenix.
Yeah. Phoenix.
You know.
Yeah.
He bounced to Brooklyn. He bounced to Golden State after it came up with Oklahoma City. And a lot of it is Kyrie Irving from Cleveland. There's another one. He's with Dallas now. And then, you know, he had forced his way out of Cleveland to Boston. And like they're chasing rings or chasing something, you know, in their heart of, well, what do you really want other than something new? So
now, you know, I don't know if you listen to Mark Price for Three podcasts. Mark Price embraced Cleveland, and Cleveland still loves him. And I'm wondering if Donovan Mitchell and every other athlete out there ever considers what it's like to just be beloved like Rocky Colavito or you and I have exchanged emails occasionally about the old Indians like Larry Brown. But do you think that enters into the agent's consideration at all?
Well, the cool thing, at least if you're an agent, actually is this gets a little complicated, but basically the Cavs can offer Donovan Mitchell more money than anybody else according to the salary cap rules, and they plan to do that. It's not like baseball where it's the Wild West where infinity is the amount of dollars you could offer. They have a thing called a maximum contract, and it favors your current team. So if you're an agent, you're getting 2% or 3%, whatever it is, from your perspective, really, Cleveland works just fine as long as it's good for your client. Here's an interesting part about Donovan Mitchell's career. Unlike a lot of NBA players, where the average coach, by the way, lasts less than 3 years. How about this? J.B. Bickerstaff's coached the Cavaliers for 4.5 years. He is the sixth longest tenured NBA coach with his current team. So So these guys are all less than one-term president. Donovan Mitchell played 2 years at Louisville for Rick Pitino. Then he played 5 years at Utah for Quinn Snyder. And now he's played 2 years at Cleveland for J.B. Bickerstaff. He hasn't been through the coaches fired in the middle of the year, or this guy's the fourth coach in 6 years at this place. And that is a common experience in the NBA. And I would say he's had three very experienced coaches. So I don't think he's really knows totally what the whole NBA chaotic experience is.
I hope that works. I like the guy a lot. I think he's very upright fellow from everything I can tell about him, and I hope he stays in Cleveland. I also wanted to talk to you about the coaching thing, because I love Kevin Stefanski. I've never met him, don't know anything about him other than I like his demeanor and how he presents. I started attending Browns game when Blanton Collier was on the sideline, and we've gone through like 1,000 coaches. I'd love to have a Bud Grant or a Tom Lane or someone who will just stay there for 20 years. Marty Schottenheimer, I guess, lasted a long time. What do you think? You think Stefanski's going to be a two-term president in the NFL terms?
Well, how about this? If he survives this year, that'll be 5 years. That was longer than Marty Schottenheimer.
What? Really?
Yeah. 4.5 years. Yeah.
Oh, I would have sworn that Schottenheimer was there for 7 or 8 years. Maybe it was just because we always thought he lost the playoff games.
That. Yeah, that's because they actually were good, and it felt great. He could. I mean, the Browns' history of coaches is, they get rid of them quite a bit. I think you have to go now he's approaching, I think, Sam Ratigliano was 5 years. And then back then you go back to Paul Brown and then Collier. So they get rid of him. Yeah, he's got a chance. And the other thing that's been nice, too, he's been with the same general manager, Andrew Berry, and that gives you some stability. We're here. I mean, not only were they always changing coaches, general managers, they were even always changing PR directors until Peter John Baptiste has come in. I think he's been there 10 years now. He does a great job. So the other ones did. They just got fired along with everybody else. Just firing all the time. In fact, for example, there's some question of, okay, should the Cavaliers, for example, keep J.B. Bickerstaff? And a lot of fans want to fire him because the team didn't go as far as they wanted or whatever. So I've been answering emails, okay, if not Bickerstaff, who?
I love the column on that. I like J.B. too, but yeah. I don't know enough about basketball to have an informed opinion. I'm going to go talk with Terry during the break, then I'm going to ask him to stick around and come back after the break. Don't forget, Terry's Talking is his podcast. Dave Campbell, and he do a fabulous job because it's really for people who want an informed, calm take on sports. If you play Terry's Talking Bingo, the word injury, drama, and kicker will come up almost. You can almost always get a bingo if you put injury, drama, and bingo and kicker on the bingo card. When we come back, Terry and I are going to talk about what players should and should not say, and when they ought to say it, and how they ought to say it if they're going to take to the public forum. Don't go anywhere. I'm going to talk to Terry during the break. We'll put it on my podcast today.
Portions of the Hugh Hewitt Show are brought to you in part by AmFed Coin and Bullion. Go to AmericanFederal.com for more info.
I'm back now talking with Terry Pluto. This was not heard over the air. You hear it on the podcast today. So I'm going to present to him the debate we had on the program this week. Terry, Dwayne is a very good umpire of Little League. And he's been umpired. He's umpired at the World Series in Cooperstown for Little League people. And this past week, he had a 12-year-old, 10 to 12-year-old league. A 12-year-old hits a home run over the fence, his first time ever. And he takes off, as Dwayne says, like Usain Bolt. And he has a teammate on second who's bunny hopping. Bunny hops to third. Bunny hops, and the kid's got his head down to hit the tater and passes him and goes to home first. And Dwayne called him out, and the home run doesn't count. Now, would you have done in that?
Yeah.
That's Terry right, Pluto, what would you have done?
I'd have called him out.
Of course you do, because it's the rule.
Et tu, Brute.
And I'll tell you, here's how I discovered the rule, and I don't know. My friend Frank and I, when we were like in high school, we went to Pittsburgh to see a game, and Tim McCarver was playing for some team playing the Pirates. I think it was the Cardinals. Bases loaded, okay? He hits one out of the park. He bolts down first base. This is major league ball. He passes the guy who was just bunny hopping or curl crawling to second base, and they call him out. He got, I think, credited with
a single,
three RBIs or something. But, yeah, a single and three RBIs. And it stuck with me. But, look, you know that. You don't pass guys on the base.
Well, a 12-year-old hits his first home run.
I don't care.
No, not 12-year-old. You know,
Justice
right.
versus
I don't care.
Mercy. Terry, I was counting on you to be, because Dwayne is Mr. Justice.
Baseball without rules is recess.
Terry, you've done me so much injury. You've just empowered Radio Blogger to correct me on all my sports takes.
Well, that's what happens, Hugh, when you're in the arena like Teddy Roosevelt.
Even somebody from Cleveland knows that there are rules.
Oh, my goodness. Well, stand by, Terry. We're going to come back on the air. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. I wanted to ask Terry Pluto about Harrison Butker and about kickers generally. Terry talks a lot about kickers. And, Terry, why do you focus on kickers so much?
Because they are the difference oftentimes between winning and losing in the NFL, where most of the games are 7 points or less. Part of the reason the Browns were in a surprising 11-6 last year is they had a hot kicker named Dustin Hopkins who won at least three games in the final minute with field goals of 40 yards or more. And usually kickers are, you only think about them when they mess up. And then
and
you
so
want another one.
Did Harrison Butker mess up, or should athletes, I like it when athletes talk about their faith. I don't always agree with their interpretation. So I don't want to make this about Butker specifically, but you write a column about faith every week for the Plain Dealer. You talk about it on Terry's Talking every week with David Campbell. Does that ever put you in the position of having your regular readers come at you sideways?
I mean, some people want to talk about, you know, doctrine or whatever, but it's like I don't do denominational spitball fights or, you know, gay bishops or abortion or that. You find that stuff all over the place. You know, for example, I know he gave a graduation speech. One of the first I wrote a column for this weekend on, all right, what I would say to graduation speech, I mean, one of the things I would say is I've seen more and more young people get messed up by being in crazy relationships. You should, whether it's not only just, you know, romantic ones, but at work. I remember when I was a young sports writer, I was hanging around with the guys that were kind of cynical and this and I. All of a sudden, that you talk about a virus, that negative attitude jumps on you. And when you don't have a grateful heart, that can roll off into the workplace and other things. Or how about just a very simple something like this, Hugh? Being on time. You know, yep. We often think we're allowed to be late, but the other person isn't.
Yeah, if you don't value another person's time as much as your own, it's really a vanity problem. So, Terry, I wanted to close by asking you about Terry's Talking. Have you grown to like this? I mean, it sounds like you and Dave now really enjoy doing this. And I love the podcast.
Yeah, I have. I mean, the key thing is because Dave Campbell is a great host. He does most of the preparation. I just talk. And that's the blessing there. Is given I'm not a big podcast listener. It's just, this is kind of how I roll, but a lot of people do. And so I want to connect with people in different media ways. It's just like, it's the funny thing. Once in a while, people say, I get these things they're mad about. Well, that I write these faith columns or whatever. And I'm like, well, don't read it. So, you know, read something else. Okay, go back to reading about the Browns. And, you know, the 95th column I've written about Deshaun Watson in the last 4 months. I mean,
I was going to try and get through an entire half hour without bringing him up.
Well, there you are. You're right about it. There'll be plenty of time for that.
But yeah, that's what I told everyone. Let's wait and see. If he can't throw the football come the summer.
You're going down a bad road.
no one's ever had this injury, right?
If it has, a lot of baseball players haven't come back, but it's significant. You know, anything with the shoulder, whether it's broken bones or whatever, shoulder injuries make people in pro sports nervous. Back injuries do. shoulder injuries usually tend to be more severe than elbow injuries. And so those kind of things are there. But Hugh, where I wanted to circle back was, you've always been very good at different forms of media. And I've learned, looking at some of the people that have been veterans like you and others, to see, okay, they're doing it print-wise. I mean, now and then the Plain Dealer runs some of your columns and their editorial section. And so you have that. You've got the radio. You know, you do the different TV things. You got the podcast, and I'm sure I'm forgetting something, Twitter, X. So yep. Those are things that I realize if I want to survive, I got to do that.
Communicators got to communicate, especially if you know what you're talking about. And what I appreciate about Terry talking, he and Dave are smart, smart about what they talk about. And so, Terry, thank you for all your work. Thank Dave for me. Have a great weekend, and let's not talk about Deshaun Watson until the summer. Be well, my
thank
friend.
Thank you very much. Thanks, guys.
Generalissimo, we got Larry Arn coming up, but yeah. I have to say, you win. I'm going to give it up. You made the right call. If Terry Pluto agrees with you, you made the right call.
Well, yes, and thank you for finally accepting reality. Yes, it's good to be on the side of people that actually live by rules. It's a rule of law game.
A rule of law game. Coming right back with Dr. Larry Arn, also a rule of law man. Don't go anywhere, America. The Hillsdale Dialogue is next on The Hugh Hewitt Show.